You are now listening to the EPND podcast on the Extraordinary People Next Door Network.
Who is it?
Yo, it's Brother Jason.
It's Brother Amel, man.
Yo, peace. Come on in. Peace.
What's going on? We back.
Oh, what's going on, man?
Peace. With another episode of EPND, Extraordinary People Next Door. We got a honor to have a special guest sitting down with a brother who I met through Brother Emil, but probably knew we met probably back, you know, so it's so intertwined, but it's an honor to sit down with Brother Kofi, man. How you feel today?
Yeah, likewise, good, brother. Man, thanks for having me, man.
Hey, man, absolutely. It's 100% our pleasure. So you know, we just, you know, the premise of the podcast is we, you know, you watch on YouTube, and I guess the latest trend is to interview these so-called hood legends, you know, and but it's while we walk by the greatness that's walking around us every day. And so we want to tap into the greatness of the overlooked genius that is brothers just every day and sisters walking around. And so that's why we call the podcast Extraordinary People Next Door.
Yo, that's dope, man.
Yeah. So I'm you know, we want to go back. Where are you from, Brother Kofi?
I'm originally from Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago, Southside.
Southside. Now,
low end.
They call that the low end?
I'm from the low end.
Okay. And yes. Then that's opposite the hundreds, right?
Opposite, now, yes.
Okay.
Yes. We like the 30s, the 40s, 50s.
The 30s. 60s. Okay. Now, you hear legendary and famous. I mean, Chicago has a great, has a reputation, right?
Yes.
And I think that when Chicago is portrayed in the media, a lot of the negative is focused on, but Chicago is a world-class city. We were talking about that off the mic. Talk about some of the history of Chicago. You were talking about Lou Rawls, and go ahead.
Oh, man. Shaka Khan, Lou Rawls, Minnie Riperton.
Wow. I could go Shaka on. Khan, she's from the Shy?
She's from Hyde Park, yeah.
Wow.
And in fact, Minnie Riperton and Shaka Khan went to the same high school.
Wow.
Which is Hyde Park High School.
I was watching the Sam Cooke documentary, and he's out of Chicago too, right?
Yes, he is.
That's a powerful history, man. Like they killed that brother.
Yes, they killed
him. And it was really for the revolutionary thing. He was starting his own, man. He was moving away from being tied to the record label, who back then they was raping our artists, man. You know what I'm saying? And Sam Cooke saw that, and he was cultivating his own, and that's when they, you know, set him up. It was called, did you see that?
I believe I started watching that, you know, what was it, on Netflix or Amazon?
It was on Netflix. I think it was called
Set Up.
Yeah. It was called The Two Killings of Sam Cooke or something like that. Yeah, it was powerful.
I haven't watched that yet, but, you know, I heard a lot about Sam and how he was like fighting for the people, man.
100%. Now, when you talk about, you know, we talk about the streets, you know, and you got powerful figures like Larry Hoover, Jeff Fort.
Yep.
And you know, when white people talk about their gangsters, you know what I'm saying? Like when you hear about the Kennedy family, right? You don't hear anything about Joe Kennedy and his bootlegging past.
The heinousness that took place. Nah, you won't get that.
Right.
Man. It's
right.
Not part of their narrative.
And that's because for them, the transition is nothing. It's just a part of their evolution.
Yes.
But they don't give us the same leeway. Right.
No, we don't get the same leeway at all. They have to downplay us, man.
100%.
You know, because they know who we are. You know, the world knows who we are, you know what I'm saying? So, and when it comes to the people of Chicago, there's so many blacks there that they're so afraid that the next prophet or the next Jesus Christ may pop up out of this spot. You know what I'm saying? Because the level of black people that's there, man, I'm telling you, man, it's incredible. And they don't want you to see this side of the city.
That's true. That's true. It's power.
We have events that take place, man, where we have over almost 100,000 people come for the weekend and not one incident, but you'll never hear nothing about that. So it's important that they highlight the negative aspects of that city because they do not want you to know that heaven is there.
Tell us a little bit about that that event that you're talking about that brings out 100,000
from all over
black folks.
It's called the Chosen Few Picnic. Yeah, it's incredible. And if you ever get on YouTube, type in the Chosen Few Picnic Chicago, it'll blow your mind, man. And it's such a peaceful event, you know, and people get together for music.
It's a brother that was telling me about that. He was making reference to it when I talked to him when I went to Chicago, and he was talking about, I think he was a Q, you know what I'm saying? He said he was talking about just going to hang out, and he was talking about, but it's called The Chosen Few, right?
Yep.
And then you also have like the Bud Billiken Parade. That's legendary. Yeah, it is, you know, and just the history of Chicago is powerful. Now, can you talk about just the legacy of like a Larry Hoover or a Jeff Fort and the power that those men had?
Oh man, them guys, like, they held it down for like hundreds of thousands of people in the city, man. It would have been great if they could have found a mechanism to connect everything, but
they were trying. They were on their way, right?
They were on their way, but you know, COINTELPRO, you know, they got to dig in and stop this type of shit because they can't afford for a Black Messiah to rise up. And this is the whole thing, to stop the Black Messiah, because they know we coming. You know what I'm saying? And not to sound racist or nothing like that.
No, it's real.
The pendulum has to swing, you know what I mean? Like, and we've been kind of on the bad end of the pendulum, if you know what I'm saying. So I think right now what's happening is the swing of the pendulum, man. And they trying to thwart any positive image of Chicago by highlighting anything that takes place in that city. You know what I'm saying? But they don't tell you about a lot of the positive things that's going on in there. Like I say, it's heaven and hell. And to highlight the hell is important because the minute the other side started to creep out, it's over. And it's starting to creep out now. You know, so you're going to be hearing some remarkable things coming from brothers out of Chicago, man, like coming from that hell.
That's exciting, man.
It's alchemy. It's an alchemical process that Chicago is going through. And if you understand alchemy and transmutation, you know, you got to go through hell. It's called coming forth to day from night. It's an Egyptian terminology. So we coming out of a particular flame, cooking out a particular demonic energy that was given to us.
Okay.
By our, you know what I'm saying, our captives. So,
man, you want to, it's one of the thoughts that I'm thinking as we're just getting this conversation going is that it is the Martin Luther King weekend. And, you know, a lot of people have discussed Dr. King being assassinated and, you know, what was the motivation behind his assassination and the progress in his message in terms of like going from fighting for integration, using nonviolent means, and, you know, over time, because he had a lengthy time in the public spotlight and as a community leader, you know, I guess going back probably even maybe like 54, 53 or 55, or definitely with the Montgomery bus boycott all the way to his death in 68. And we saw a lot of changes that took place during his lifetime. But it seemed like the Vietnam War was something he began to speak out more, and also poverty. And I know that when he went to address poverty, he actually went in a slum, quote unquote, a slum in Chicago and stayed there for at least a month, him and Coretta.
Yeah, I think I heard about it. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, and it seemed like, I think he was... he was attacked viciously by some white folks.
I think
folks.
He got stabbed.
It might have been in Chicago.
A grocery store.
It might have been in Chicago. I know it was up north that he got stabbed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Chicago or New York City, but I know for a fact that he was championing the move against poverty, and he went to address northern discrimination and the conditions in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Just talk to us a little bit about what you witnessed growing up in Chicago and what was the environment like, you know?
Well, you know, Chicago is like, man, so many black people, bro. So we didn't have to deal with that level of racism because we was never around them. And if you seen a white person, you'd be like, man, what the fuck? Like, it'd be like some out of a movie. That's like, true. Yo, what the hell is that?
That is true, bro.
So white person right here, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't too, like, when I started going to Indiana, I had a culture shock. Because I was like, yo, I had to go to a high school there. I wound up getting kicked out. But you know what I'm saying? When I walked into the high school, I didn't see nobody, me and my brother. And then the bell rung. And when the bell rung, man, all these white kids come rushing out, man. I thought I was in a Freddy Krueger movie, man. It was crazy. I just never had. So we never had to deal with that, the white racism, unless we went over to where they were at.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And, so it was just, it was more black on black.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we didn't have them to directly go at. We didn't feel that. You know what I'm saying? We just felt each other.
Because when you talk about the dynamics of the South or the Chicago,
it's checkerboard.
And there's a million black people on the South side alone. You know, and that's one side of town.
Yes.
Right. You know, and it's funny because when you go to a city like that, and they, you know, we talked about the narrative that they try to push about Chicago, but they don't speak about the black millionaires.
Yes.
And it's just a range. And I think that that's a perspective that somebody from a city like Pittsburgh, they don't have. You know, like here, I don't want to diss Pittsburgh, but sometimes the mentality is, it's a bar on the mentality. And I think that that's because we don't see, like, growing up in Detroit, you know, you saw, I mean, you saw the struggle, but you also saw neighborhoods in the city of Detroit where you had black people living in multi-million dollar homes right in the hood.
Beverly Hills, Chicago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You would be, yo, you go through that email, you'd be like, yo, what is this?
And we talked about Hyde Park.
You know what I'm saying? Same thing.
And these are historical neighborhoods where black people are living good. The history of, isn't it, what's the people that made the product?
Johnson and Johnson?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Chicago. But yeah.
Johnson Publishing.
Yes.
I think Johnson & Johnson is different.
They are different.
But it's Johnson Publishing, which is responsible for Ebony Magazine.
Jet Magazine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we were talking about your childhood, you know, growing up. Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, Blackstone Ranger, you know what I'm saying, BPSN. But I always had a quest for knowledge that, you know, would always hit me. I always wanted to know. So I was a different type of brother. Even when I was selling crack, I was reading Dr. York pamphlets and, you know what I'm saying? Cats was looking at me like, yo, they was going to high school in limousines. I was like reading the pamphlets, you know, just taking my money and giving it back to the babies that are the crack families, you know what I'm saying? So after a while, it wasn't no sense in me selling crack because my emotions wouldn't allow me to really sell it no more.
Wow.
Especially the information that I was getting at the time. You know, and back to the King thing, man, there's so much about King in Chicago. You know, we had a brother by the name of Steve Coakley. He's also known as the Boulay Buster. Mm. And he talked about how King was like actually a prop that was pushed in there. It's a book called The Big Six. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that, and how they were paid, how King was paid to speak at that march that he spoke at. And how he was actually set up too, you know what I'm saying, by Jesse Jackson. Like, it's so much in the city talked about. Like, you go in these barbershops, you hear these old barbers that know the story, you can get the story from the barbershop cats, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So King for us was like somebody who kind of slowed us down for a lot of us. We didn't need to be integrated with white people.
That's true.
We were well off without them.
That's true.
We were doing better without them.
That's true.
And I think it was beneficial for them to integrate with us.
That's true.
Because of our skill set and the level of creativity we have coming from us. And they understood this.
And they said,
the technology they were endowed with.
Right.
Since Musa taught them, you know, how to some of the old deceptive ways, you know what I'm saying? They used really well.
Right. And you talked about, they said that later, King was evolving, and I heard Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, he really was. Okay. I think he was coming out of like this nonviolent shit. Right. Like he was like, "Yo, they hit us. He hit me again. I'm probably gonna shoot you." Right, ass,
and
you
know? They said they
excuse
said
my language.
That, no, go ahead, bro. and they said that I think Harry Belafonte said that Dr. King came to him and he said that I fear that I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning house. You know,
yeah.
And it's funny because the brother spoke today and he was talking about. I believe it was in shortly before he was assassinated where he met with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And that's a famous meeting. And he talked about, he said, Dr. King asked the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said, do you believe that all white people are evil? And he said that he told him, we're both from Georgia. He said, you know, you got poisonous snakes. You know, and he said, you got non-venomous snakes. He said, but, you know, when you don't know the difference, that's the danger. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I believe that Dr. King, you know, his language began to change. He yeah. changed from the language of Negro yeah. to black people. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And who knows? You talked about the Vietnam War. Who knows where he was headed before he was assassinated? You know,
and he could may have been well on his way of, like, changing his whole way of looking at things because you get tired of getting beat on like that.
That's
man.
A fact.
Come on, man.
That's a fact. That's
and then you
fact.
Got other people getting hurt from you marching and all these, you know, like, come on.
That's a fact.
So
that's
also fact. I understood that he understood the native aspect of the so-called African-American over here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He was starting to really speak on that. And he was speaking on that in codes in a lot of speeches he was making.
Right.
Because we have a history here that's not talked about, which is the Native Indian aspect of who we are. You know right. what I'm saying? Granted, we all come from Africa originally from its origin, but we still have a origin here that don't start necessarily with slavery.
That's right.
And I think Martin Luther King understood some about that.
Right.
So
now you talked about being on the streets and you talked about making a transition. How, mm-hmm. how did you make that transition?
I mean, reading,
right?
You know, in the spirit world, right. I had things spiritually happening to me that I couldn't explain. Like, for instance, I was at the beach one day. We have a beach in Chicago where they drum at. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm not.
It's called Congo Beach.
Wow.
You may see somebody from Earth, Wind, and Fire, like, you know, from back in the day, like, wow. drumming. Old school guys with the crystals, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And one particular day, they were drumming and... Man, the spirit took over me. The wind blew. And this lady voice came out and said, she said, hey, we're your ancestors. Mm. And as it was the wind started blowing hard. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, yo, what the? You know what I'm saying? And she said, we're your ancestors. And I just started breaking down, man. And the drums was going. And from that, I had already was getting hit spiritually by different things that was just going on, you know, from just being in that community, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
The killing. You know, I lost my pops. He got murdered. You know what I'm saying? I think like three people in my family that year got killed. Mm. So it was like, it was an inner transmutation taking place in me that I had nothing to do with. So the spirit started talking, like literally. Like again, I'm on the beach and here this lady come. I'm like, what? I never had nothing like that happen to me. Mm. And that's when I knew that it was something bigger outside of what we could see that was orchestrating things. You know what I'm saying? So that's when I knew that just because you can't see it, it don't mean it don't exist. You can't see the wind, but you can feel its effects.
Yeah, the Quran talks about the unseen.
So this, yeah. So I tuned into that spirit time. Mm. And it changed my life. Mm. And that day... Some brothers I went to school, I went to Paul Robeson, one of the worst high schools in Chicago. And I seen one of the cats I went to school with. And I'm one of the oppositions at this school because it's like GDs, BDs, and I'm stoned. Mm. But I'm cool with all the major heads. Mm. All the leaders, Gino, IGD Bible, you know what I'm saying? IGD Gino, Bible, all the major cats that y'all may hear about today, I went to school with these guys. I had division, my division class was nothing but leaders.
Wow.
And
that's powerful. Even just the hierarchy of the gangs or street organizations in Chicago, it's a and people sometimes now attribute the killings now to the lack of leadership, that the young people is kind of like more like wide open now, you know what I'm saying? But you talk about, yeah, that
it was a lot of manipulation with the OGs, you know what I'm saying? Right. The OGs manipulated a lot of the youth. They were taking the knowledge and using it for their own benefit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, a lot of them was getting killed out, a lot of them getting locked away. So I think when Chief got locked up and when Jeff Ford got locked up, that put a dent in the city.
Right. Right. And really all of that was orchestrated because
yes,
that he was set up, you know, by the government, where who was supposedly had some deal with Libya?
Farrakhan.
Well, but they tried to tie the gangs into that. I know that the minister had his relationship with Gaddafi.
They tried to tie it into Chief Malik, saying that we were going on this rampage, this terrorism shit.
But that was trumped up, though.
It was all trumped up.
Right.
Yep. And that's what kicked it all off for a lot of us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
In fact, this is around the time I left. We got pushed out of, you know, my mother kind of moved, my grandmother and them kind of moved us around. Because of the stuff that was going on.
Wow. Now, can you talk about, you were mentioning the spiritual awakening that you experienced. Where did that take you?
Man, it made me know that it was other forces that was at work unbeknownst to the sight. You know what I'm saying? So
yes,
I started working with the unseen forces. I started knowing instead of believing. You know what I mean? Because now I had tangible evidence because it happened to me. Then I have another episode where I'm in the basement and I'm in a rocking chair. And that same lady voice came back and she told me to heal myself. And I looked around like, what the? And she said, heal yourself. That was my second experience with that voice again, you know, so. And it took me to meditation. And one day I was meditating and a ball presented itself with all these colors. Amazing. Like I never seen that. I mean, I've seen the real orange, the real red, the real green, you know? So again, I know we're playing with something that ain't physical, but it manifests into this physical reality. If we were to deal with it, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
Everything emanates from the unseen world.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And the unseen world is why I've been playing that since I had those experiences. And it's called occultic, the occult world. You know what I'm saying? And that's where I'm at now.
Right. Wow. Now, you talked about Indiana and it was some culture shock.
Oh man, huge.
Wow. Now, how much time did you spend in Indiana?
Probably Indiana. I first went there in 87.
Wow.
And I left and went back to Chicago. My brothers and them, they were there, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But since 87, 88, I've been doing it back and forth in Indiana. I wound up having a baby in Indiana in 93.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, so since those experiences I had, I knew that we were playing with something else, and I knew that my people had to know this.
Right.
So it put me on another level of looking at people in life.
Right.
So now my approach with people was different, you know what I'm saying? And my quest for knowledge became different because now I really want to know what's going on. You know?
So Brother Kuf, like you're one of the brothers that I've interacted here with in the city that constantly, you know, there's not an area of knowledge, whether it's into, you know, academic, philosophical, related to the art, and you know, you just very extremely well versed, spiritual knowledge that it's not easy to attain. Like, why, if you know, becoming in tune with these spiritual frequencies, like why not go to the black church? Why not? And what was your introduction? Because you just like I mentioned, you just have such a diversity of knowledges that you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that path and kind of like, yeah, just tell us about that path.
With those experiences, I go back to that again. I started seeing how nature was teaching me. I didn't necessarily need a book, but I would go to a book to confirm the information that I was getting from nature to qualify and quantify what I was getting from the unseen world. And it would be spot on. So I think I tapped into like the what they would call the Akashic records, if you will, to where I don't think we need books. It's another force that we can tap into and get this information. And we can go to the books to get to qualify it and to quantify it or pull a ruler to it and say, hey, this measures up. You know, so just having an open mind to the hidden things amongst us in our surroundings. It's the actual reality, because it's the reality that emanates into this physical reality. But we kind of see it before it comes here.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. That's powerful. Yeah.
So it makes you intuitive. You can kind of see things before they manifest. You kind of like, yo, don't do that. And people be like, why you? Yeah. So.
Now, I don't want to get too deep into it, but, you know, what I know is that, you know, you was known out there in the streets and in Chicago and everywhere you've went in terms of being a, not only just a stand-up dude, but, you know, we used to be wild boys or, you know, a yes, little sir. Bit, mm-hmm. you know, not the same refined gentleman that we are today.
Yeah, we used to gang bang, sell crack, you know what I'm saying? The whole shebang.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, can you kind of like guide us through? So like when you're getting this knowledge, how old are you?
Ooh, like 16?
16.
17, 15.
Now you had already jumped off the porch though.
I've been off the porch.
How old was you when you had like really just jumped off the porch and probably and got out there?
8 or 9. Yeah.
And it was like you just
we were grown. We would leave, you know, we weren't even latchkey kids. We were something like, you know, we were just grown. You know, growing up in Chicago in the inner city at that time was like we would go downtown with a whole crew of us at that age.
Go downtown and the goal is what? Just get some
at the time we were breakdancing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Make some money. Trying to do something positive, but police start locking us up for that. So what you gonna do now? Wow. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
It's yeah. Like, so you coming out doing the breakdancing and mm-hmm. this is like early 80s.
Yep.
And the people are feeling, the people's feeling it.
Oh yeah. We, in fact, this is hip hop trivia. We did the, when Farrakhan bought the Nation back out in 84, we did the first event for him at Kickapoo Park. Me, Rocksteady Crew Chicago. That's who I was with.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
So man, like, so you was a pop.
When he first announced the Nation of Islam coming back out, 1983, it was.
Okay.
In Chicago at Kickapoo Park.
So you was a pop locker and a breakdancer at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that your first hip hop art form that you was really a performer in and a expert in?
Yeah. Breakdancing and, you know, and in Chicago, we did everything together. So we all got the same skill sets. You know, basketball is where we really started at, you know. But breakdancing, whatever fad came along, we was in it, you know.
You was on it.
But the drug came in. That was a fad. So we hopped on that too. And unfortunately, a lot of us didn't make it out of that.
So, I read this book, this Gang Leader for a Day is by a dude, Sudhir Venkatesh. And it kind of talked about like the projects in Chicago, and I guess like mm-hmm. most of the major projects have been demolished. And
yeah, Robert Taylor, one of the buildings I grew up in, 4022 South State. Shout out to anybody listening that was living there. Peace and love. Yeah, that's the one of the big red buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Well, this is the one on State Street where you seen all those buildings line up down the whole strip.
That's the Robert Taylor home.
That's Robert Taylor home.
Wow.
And also did Ida B. Wells.
Ida B. Wells, right.
Yeah, so yeah. I did all the projects on the south side. We you know, I got homies, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We definitely deep-rooted in the city.
Now, when, like, I mean, I think, what's that like? It's not even 50 years ago. It's like 30, 40 years ago when this time period that we're talking about. What was the impact? Like, I was born in 1983 in Boston. So I keep hearing, I just listened to an interview with Rick Ross on Vlad, And, you know, he's talking about this time period when crack really hit the streets. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because I was a child, but I was alive. Mm-hmm. Like, so it was so new, but it was impacting the community so rapidly.
Man, quick. I mean, it changed the face of the city. You know what I'm saying? Like, very quick. So I'm like second stream. So we come out, the first guys that had it, they got burnt out. And here we come. And at this time, we had no organization.
So when you say second string, like the first, like the dudes who was a little bit older than you.
Yes.
They maybe what, 20?
At that time, yeah, probably like 20 something. Yeah,
they 20. In their 20s.
Yeah. So, but they passing us the dope to go sell to them because we ain't going to get the big charge.
So they got you guys because you guys are juveniles. They got mm-hmm. y'all really moving it and, mm-hmm. and doing the legwork.
Mm-hmm. But so they get burnt out at one time. So nobody's selling now. So now we got like at least 4 months that went by. So now, big bro. Here come big bro.
You got to pick it up.
Here come big bro. I'm going to give you 10. I'm going to give you 10. You bring me back five, you know what I'm saying? So it was like a half and half deal.
And at first, like, it's like, you know, I think now when we think about people that's addicted to drugs or addicts, you know, it's like, we see them, it's visible, like, a lot of times. What was it? Was it a party vibe? Was it like, you know, because it seemed like people's moms and aunties and uncles. And
yeah, it was a nigga vibe. You know, it's just a nigga vibe, escapism. Coming from the hells, being in North America and the tragedies and all the shit we go through, all those were perfect holes for us to go through and kind of engage in those type of shits mm-hmm. to really destroy us.
And the way that the these project buildings was, in a lot of ways, from what I understand, is like the cops really couldn't stop or interfere in what was going on. Like, y'all really had it on smash. Like, basically, they were scared to come into the projects and, like...
Well, it was designed to do so. I mean, it was designed that way. Mm-hmm. You know, they knew what they were doing. Ronald Reagan, the whole don't do drugs. That whole shit was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to stop the Black Messiah, to stop a particular individual from raising up a level of consciousness that would take over, you know, America and eventually the world. Mm-hmm. So all these drugs, everything you see that's going on in the Black community is for a reason.
Right.
So war is at us.
Right.
You know, and we have to understand this because we have been asleep and they know we're awakening. And when we wake up from this slumber, what happens? You see, so it's important that they do their job, man, and kind of put shit out here to kind of help slow down the pace of what's inevitable, you right. know what I'm saying? Which is the takeover.
Quick question. We talked about Detroit. We talked about Chicago. And around the 80s, maybe the late 70s into the early 80s, you had the advent of like Black mayors. DC had Marion Barry. Detroit had
All Design.
Coleman A. Young. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about Harold Washington, like that era?
Oh yeah, Harold was dope, man.
Yeah.
Harold Washington was dope.
Right.
Just a good man. I what can you say about Harold Washington, man?
Right.
He was somebody that he probably would have been the first president.
Right.
Had he stayed alive, yeah.
Right.
And it's who Obama was inspired by.
Right.
Harold Washington, bro. Yep. You gotta check him out.
Yeah, but and you talk about how Larry Hoover and Chief Malik mm-hmm. was trying to, like, at a certain point make a pivot, and GDs was trying to turn into, like, growth and development. Mm-hmm. And
even, well, they started out as growth and development. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But, you know what happens. You
right.
know, you got to weaponize these niggas.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's all about weaponizing
against
them
themselves,
now.
Right.
You have to, but, right. you know, in the universal scheme of things, nothing is added on, nothing is taken away. So everything that we're going through is divine.
That's true. That's
and
true.
Once we understand perspective, and once we understand yin and yang, good and evil, bad and ugly, we can begin to know that this is a necessary force down here that we can use to our benefit. But if we don't know this, shit becomes devils and shit becomes gods. And and we got shit out of whack.
Yeah, you made me think when you were talking about that alchemy piece.
This is what it is.
I remember the minister did a he did a lecture. It was called Out of the Furnace of Affliction to Redeem a Fallen Humanity. And he talked about, because somebody could question, why would we be allowed to go through this?
Yeah.
And
this is a divine fire. You know, you got some dirty ass water. You got to put that shit on the
purification.
Fire. You got to put some fire on that to burn out the impurities.
That's true.
The shit we're going through is a necessary process.
Yes.
It's an alchemical process. And once we learn, if they was to teach us alchemy, we could understand death a lot better, because death has never been an enemy to man. You know, unfortunately, the way we die is a hurtful way of leaving.
Right.
But it's not an enemy. It is but a friend.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. And just a transitory transition.
From caterpillar to butterflies, man, right. Because scientifically we know that you can't kill energy.
Right. So
it just changes forms.
As you move from the streets and then this spiritual awakening that's taking place, this evolution, what did you find to channel this spirituality and your creativity into? Where did it take you?
In terms of
just like when you leave the streets, like what were you looking to make a livelihood at after the streets? Or is that
I was looking to become God.
Go ahead. Okay.
You know,
master everything, right?
You know, something that I have initially felt within myself already, and then I had heard it.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's real? I thought I was cuckoo.
Right.
You know, but then understanding the dynamics that it takes to be God and how God is a multiplicity of agencies to form this oneness. Mm. But now we're so fragmented, you know, like I think I gave the example to the brother one day, like God is this big glass that got dropped. And once it dropped, all these different pieces scattered. And this piece over here, because the light is reflecting on it such a way, it's better than this piece over here because ain't no light on it. Or this piece over here because it's bigger than this piece. You know what I'm saying? But not knowing that all these pieces come from what? The one fucking glass. Mm. So man is fragmented. And when I understood that, I understood that all these religions were the same way. Mm. These religions are nothing but drop bottles, drop glass.
That's true.
You know, now how can I get into all these religions and pull out the best aspects of them or the best technology in them and use them and apply them to my life for the now?
Right.
Which is the only time we ever even had, you know.
Now,
so the illusion is to keep people caught up on the past and the so-called future. But now, when we understand it now, we good.
Right, right. Now, I don't want to skip over anything, but how did you end up in Pittsburgh?
I was in Indianapolis working at a museum, curating, trying to get the assistant curator position. But I didn't get the job, so... One day, me and assistant curator was talking. About 2 hours, we had a great conversation. At the end of the conversation, he was like, yo, I forgot to tell you, we hired somebody for the job. I'm like, I'm like, what? Yo, my heart just sunk.
Wow.
You know, and I shouldn't have left because I didn't know they had something else set up for me.
Right.
But I wound up leaving because the light was dimming in Indianapolis.
Right.
Because a lot of conscious people were leaving and dying. And a brother seen me on a bus stop. He was like, Koof, you still here? He said, get out of here, man. I was like, man, I'm about to leave in a week, man. He's like, man, good, man, get out of here. And I left, man. And when I left, man, Indianapolis got very crazy.
Wow.
Like, so that's when I understood that certain people bear light in certain places. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they may not be accepted, or they may be accepted, but it's up to the people, and you can either take them or leave them. But when the light leaves, you can see the dimness in the city. So I think I got pushed around here for a reason, and Pittsburgh needed this particular light. And for whatever reason, Knapp is dealing with what they're dealing with. Again, it's all necessary. Nothing is ever added. Nothing is ever taken away. This is all alchemy. And this is this whole thing is a divine process. Right. And depending on our perspective, we can make this heaven or hell. So we have to do a lot of inner work to be able to see the proper way, which means being honest with ourselves, getting healthy, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I got my little ways and, you know what I'm saying, I drink my little beers or whatever, you know, but I'm not too radical, you know what I mean? But I do understand that I have to be honest with me, and if I'm going to be a healthier person, I got certain things I got to do, right, and there's certain inner works that I have to do to show and prove who I am to myself. So it's the inner workings that I realized that has to take place. You can go to lectures, you can get books, you can do all that, but if you're not doing no inner work to see your shadow self, to see your ego self, then you walk around here on some, you're just putting layers of bullshit on you, thinking you just gonna escape, you know. Nah, you gotta get to the inside. Let's get to the core of you. That way we can start changing things around.
It's deep, man, what you're teaching right here, because one of the things I'm very thankful that you shared with me was really tapping into or discussing and helping me better understand this concept of the chakras. Mm-hmm. And, you know, could you just kind of like break that down for our listeners and about the lower chakras and the higher chakras and just, you know, because whatever your spiritual tradition is, these are systems and ways of understanding that are in place. And
yeah, and they affect us on a day to day. So and they are operational modems that we use. Like, people who operate from the lower chakras are people who usually feed, fuck, and fight. And people who operate from a higher chakra, you know, from the heart chakra and up, they usually build, dialogue, you know what I'm saying? So you have two people out here. You have animal man, which is the lower three chakras. Then you have the higher man, which is the heart man, which is the Christ man, which operates from the heart chakra, the throat chakra, because he's able to express himself, the third eye chakra, and, you know, he's able to come in and out of the worlds from the crown chakra. So understanding the chakras is pivotal, because you can understand where you're operating from. And just through your ways and actions, you know whether you're Christ man or you animal man. We know animals feed, fucking fight. So if you feed, fucking, and fighting, you probably operate from the belly down. And what's at the belly down? Your stomach, your balls, your dick, you know, excuse my language, just in case any youth out there, apologies. But the chakras are very real. And a lot of times, if we incorporated studying the chakra system in the school systems, a lot of the ADHD, like, we start putting color charts up, stuff for the senses, to stimulate the senses, we can rid a lot of the mental illnesses that we have. And a lot of our issues are easy to solve, but they've made them so complicated and they've medicated the shit that we can't see that colors and smells and the beauty of nature can really take us out of these different hellfires, man. So it's really simple, man. It's really us. We create our heavens and hells.
But it's also about the people that's in control of the curriculums in the schools and actually creating the programming for this young people. They're not in tune the same way that you're in tune.
Nah, well, you know, they may be, but maybe they don't want you to be in tune the same way I'm in tune. Mm-hmm. Maybe they know just what I know, and to keep you asleep, to keep their world going, because remember, they on time. We don't have to really worry about time. We got caught up in a lie of time. We were taught that time never really was. It was just only that once something came into existence, it had to leave here. But the ultimate time, like, we on ultimate time. And if we live by that, and this goes beyond this physical reality, because there's no death for us. We constantly changing these clothes. You know? You may come back and be like, oh, this happened before. You may have a day, what they call deja vus, mm-hmm, and whatnot, you know what I'm saying? But that may be some way we correcting something to not come back here. Maybe the trick is to not be in these bodies. And this is something that nobody's really talking about, with the exception of like Brother Panic, Bobby Hemmett, you know what I'm saying? And maybe we got tricked in these bodies. Because when you get here, you're going to have to deal with the hellfire. You're going to have to deal with that yin and yang. And if you're not understanding that, in order to pull off in a car, you're going to need two charges. You need a positive charge and you need a negative charge. Without those two charges, guess what that car is doing? Not doing.
Nothing.
It's not doing nothing. The same principle that applies to that car applies to you, me, And you can call that shit God or the devil, but if you don't find a way of cohesively putting them together and having this alchemical marriage, you'll never be able to pull off and turn left or right. And you'll be too busy blaming a negative charge or the positive charge without even starting a damn car up. And but these energies, and I say that because these energies are necessary. But we so down here on this lovely shit, and it's positive charge. It don't work that way here.
You can't have all
on this
positive.
Third dimension. No, it won't be life. Here we have to have a duality. Now whether you call it the devil or God is up to you, and that's what's not benefiting you or what's benefiting you. You know, to some people your God may be the devil, and the devil may be, you know what I'm saying? And that's what we're dealing with.
I heard you mention music. Mm-hmm. Earlier, can you talk about your relationship with music?
Well, music, I found out through the natural, through the nature, that music was part of our ascension, and that we all came here to play a song. And if we didn't play our song, we got to keep coming back here until we get that out. So it's important for you to play your instrument. You know what I'm saying? Music is important. Melanin and melody live together in perfect harmony. You know
that's
what I'm
powerful.
Saying?
That's powerful. Yeah, that's powerful.
So tell us a little bit. I know you, I personally know that you got bars, that you're a multi-dimensional artist. Like, tell us a little bit. I know you got a record label that you started.
It's not a label. Okay. Actually, the concept we got from my man Dip and Stan, part of the crew, you know what I'm saying, back in Indianapolis, they did a joint called Gum. We took it and we made it a genre, which is grown up music. Come get a stick of this.
Okay.
So my crew is called the Black Gnostics. And we've been together for about 20 years. And I got that name from dealing with a study group in Indianapolis called the Now Valley Institute, where we would monk out for like 10 to 12 hours just studying Blavatsky, Leary, just different occultic teachers, you know what I'm saying? To try to create a new black thought or a new black gnosis. So we study black as a cosmology, you know, not just as a, it's bigger than skin tone and all that, you know what I mean?
So Black Gnostics is a collective?
Yes.
That's powerful. While we're on music, can you tell us some of your musical influences? I knew Chicago has a strong house music root. Did you grow up on that?
Man, I'm a house head. Super house head.
Time for the percolator, right?
Well, not that type of house.
Okay.
We call that, that's like the more generic aspect.
Commercial.
Commercial.
Okay, take us to the root.
Yeah, we deep house, man.
Okay.
We more Frankie Knuckles.
Okay.
Lil Lewis, okay. Ron Hardy.
Okay.
Those are party spots we used to go to.
Right. And that was even before hip hop.
It was kind of intertwined.
Well, intertwined, because Detroit has like a similar house vibe
as well,
you know.
Yes,
and they do the JIT, you know, in the D, you know what I'm saying? But I just, tell me about like, who you listen to? Like, who you like?
As long as you're talking something clever, like, okay. You know, brand newbies, so we can go back. We can go back, man. Like,
bro,
you got to be real witty. You know,
one
what I'm
for
saying?
All.
That's that whole little.
I will put that as, that might be my favorite album of all time. I know it changed my life, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody that was cultivating in the 90s, I probably was loving them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I had such a quest for knowledge that, if you were spitting it in rap,
it was powerful, right?
I was probably a fan.
Right.
So Gravediggers.
Gravediggers was powerful. Know. Prince Paul.
Prince, rest in peace. Not Prince Paul's, but Poetic Rest.
He was in Gravediggers.
He was in Gravediggers.
And Daddy-O, right?
Not Daddy-O, but Fuquan.
But was Daddy-O in Gravediggers though?
No, I don't think. Fuquan was.
Okay, now
Fuquan was with
Daddy-O and Stetsasonic.
Yeah.
Right. Now, and then didn't Prince Paul produce for them?
Yes, he did.
Even before De La Soul, right?
Yeah. Because I think RZA was with him. RZA.
Right. RZA was with them, right? Wow, that's powerful.
Poetic.
Yeah.
Yep. And Prince.
Now,
So guys like that, you know.
Right. Wu-Tang?
Yeah, those type of, you know.
Right. That was a powerful movement.
And coming from out the Midwest, we got our own spin on that type of vibe, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if at the interview, I bought a couple of little joints. You could probably check it out.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear something. We definitely want to hear something. I know that Emil is more in on the technical end, but I want to hear something. Mm-hmm. Now in the Midwest, can you talk about the evolution of music and the hip hop in the Midwest? Twista, he's from the west side of Chicago,
yeah,
right?
West side.
Yeah.
Well, we in the middle, man. So you know, we caught it all, man.
Yeah,
we wasn't really discriminating.
That's true.
So
that's
gave us another level of
perspective, right?
How to present the MC. And so
yeah.
You had cats like Common Sense, you know, one of my favorite MCs, and you see how he did it, you know.
Bro, Resurrection changed my life, man.
Yeah, but it's a lot of cats in Chicago that didn't pop like he did, but you know, I'm telling you, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No ID.
No ID.
Tony
and Dion.
And
why not?
He was in the Nation, right? Mm-hmm. Dion Muhammad, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's powerful.
Peace, Brother Kuf, man. We back,
peace,
man.
Peace.
You know what I mean? Shout out to all our sponsors, you know what I'm saying? You know, helping keeping us going. You know what I mean? Make sure you support our sponsors. Yo, man, I had a question about education. So I appreciate all the work that you've done in education.
I appreciate you too, bro, because from doing the hip-hop education, I've been able to go to other places and talk to the kids and teach it as well, so... Big up to Emil, my man.
Appreciate
the
that,
hip-hop egg cat, you know?
Word. Yo, man, you want to share some of your experience just coming and talking to the youngins, man?
Oh, man. I tell you what, the second time I had did it, man, I broke down. I had to go in the bathroom, man, and even now, man, just looking at the youth, man, I went up to McKee's Rocks, and we did an event with them, and... you could just see the suffering, you know what I'm saying? And definitely something I gotta just keep my hand in, man, because them kids need us, man, you know, and that's what I seen. And I seen the lack of us not being there, you know what I'm saying? So it was tough, man. I was in the bathroom for about a half an hour, man. It was hard to come out. But yeah, so we here, man, so them kids ain't got nothing to worry about, man.
Yo, man, what's you know, one of the things that I hear frequently, and I'm dealing with high school age young people, and I'm sure it's the same in the middle school level, but like, you know, sometimes you hear them say things like, man, I hate school. I hate people. Like,
yeah.
I hate everything. Like, why do...
I hate myself, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I hear self-hatred, you know what I'm saying? And you know, even some of the music, you take the whole Juice WRLD piece, for instance, some of the narrative that you hear our youth projecting that I'm not going to live beyond 21, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I hear it in middle school, man, like where girls are cutting themselves and I hate my life and I don't, you know.
And see, that's what I'm saying,
that's,
man.
That's scary, bro.
A lot of this, man, you know, they weaponized our music and we have to understand, man, like it's up to us. Yeah, rap is a young man's game, but hip hop is a culture. That I don't care how old you are, if you got some lyrics in your head that you feel like you can expound to the world and it'll help, please spit that. Don't feel like you can't spit it because you ain't 25. You know, and that's the barrier we trying to break now. It's like, we looking for heads to be, I'm looking for the next head to be 60 years old, the next hit album. I feel like right now, we have to spank the youth right now because, and I know, you know, as when my mother and them was young, and generations back, every generation has the older people like, yo, that music sucks. But this music now, it don't just suck. This shit is getting us killed.
Toxic, yeah.
It's not like music prior where, you know, we weren't getting killed, you know. Our parents just didn't like it, you know. And their parents before them didn't like. And it went on and on. But now, we getting killed. The music you probably hear when you hop in your car, somebody probably got shot and laid down to that song. You know, so I think with the whole grown-up thing, you know what I'm saying, music thing, it's about really kind of spanking them a little bit and let them know, like, yo, this shit is unacceptable. Y'all falling into the, and it's not on them either, because you got these record execs and these Jewish record owners and whatnot that really don't, they have an agenda. And it's called the prison pipeline. So they weaponize this music for our youth to be sent straight to jail and be influenced to go to jail. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So it's a weaponization of the music right now, man. And we have to spank our youth, because there's no excuse, man. If you can have guys like Rakim come out at 17 and cats like Brother Jay at 17 spitting what he's spitting, then what's that to say about, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on. So we got to expect better from our kids in this music, man, because the music is profoundly affecting our way of life, man.
No doubt. So like, what would be your words to like a young teenage guy that's in there and he might be saying something like, he might be in there talking about hating school, not hate, just hating being there, hating everything that he's going through after school. Like, what would be your words of wisdom to kind of help him push through, man, and see a, because, you know, it's like, we all went to school.
Well, you have to show them the value of what school does, you know what I'm saying? What comes from it, you know what I'm saying? The causes and the effects of not doing and doing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can show them some comparisons and, you know what I'm saying, shit like that, they can kind of see the picture and, you know, that's one of the ways we can start breaking them up out of that mindset, you know, because it's a mindset.
We off air, we talked about Brother Emil is from Boston. You from the Chi.
Yes, sir.
Right? I'm from Detroit. And here we are in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And something is keeping us here.
Yeah,
know?
Because it's a profound thing that's about to probably happen in Pittsburgh, I feel. Not even probably, man. The culmination of the different individuals that I know.
Right.
And the shit that they're on, it's almost equivalent to a Wakanda. This is like the new Wakanda in Pittsburgh, man. I'm serious. So
I'm gonna hold you to that, man.
I
need to be a part of Wakanda, bro.
Yeah. Well,
I just want in on this.
I would like to say five, but the next year you're gonna see some profound things coming from the Black Bird.
I want in, and that's it's when we talked about the narrative that they put on Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You said that they're almost trying to hide the greatness.
Well, what's the first rule of war? What's the first engagement? It's propaganda, man. You have to push the propaganda first. Please. You see what I'm saying? So,
and if you look the equity study that came out,
mm-hmm.
they talked about the lifespan and the life expectancy of the Black residents here in Pittsburgh. They projected it as low, you mm-hmm. know, and basically, I think one of the lines in the study was, if you take the Black population and move them to any other city in the United States, the life expectancy will go up, the income will go up, the educational opportunities will go up. But that's almost like a hide on like what you said about Chicago. Mm-hmm. They don't want us to see any hope.
It's all propaganda. See, right. They know one thing. We are creators.
Mm.
And if they can make us think a way, we can create the way. It's about influencing us. But we don't understand this.
That's powerful, bro.
You see? We don't get it. And they have ways and mechanisms put in place where they influence us without even saying shit.
Programming. And turning us, and we don't even know we're being
and
turned.
And tunes and tones and all type of little different shit they got to there. But, you know, you work so much bullshit that it eventually hits you.
Right.
And this is the case right now.
Right.
They're doing so much to destroy
it's social engineering. Really.
Watch what happens.
Yeah.
So we have a phrase called the quickening.
Mm.
Well, you can't see it right now, right?
Mm.
But the quickening, watch the change that take place. Mm. This thing's gonna change, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying like, you know, we're here to be all this great pyramid builders shit. You know, nah, none of that. I'm saying that this is such a vast, this thing is so open. There's no telling what we can create, and there's no telling how it's going to come on and how quick we get it and just change the whole dynamic, bro.
I'm
We've been known to do this.
Right. I'm so thankful that you shared that, And I was kind of sharing with the brothers just where my spirit was at on my way here, you know, and but something caused me to like push through. And it was really the expectation. And I think that that's the beautiful, the beauty of like a group and accountability. And, you know, Brother Mill was like, nah, bro, you know what I'm saying? And just persevering. And I was even, I've been studying myself, you know, you talked about, and self-sabotage. And we, just the thing, we almost packed it up on the Rakim piece. And Amir was like, nah, we go. And you had almost like, your books came up missing. And that was like almost pulling on the spirit. But then we got them back and we just, we persevered. And the product, it was just like 5 minutes of like.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what this thing is about. You're going to be presented with the shit like that. Right. And if you're not willing to face that, you're going to have to start all over again. That's right. Go ahead, get that school over with.
Facts, bro.
Fight that, man. Then take it to another level.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, and then you'd be amazed at, you know, just dialoguing, what dialoguing does, man.
This has helped me so much.
You see what I'm saying, man?
This is therapy. This is therapy.
Oh, man. And this is what we need, man. Yeah. Yeah. We don't need reparations. We need reciprocity.
Right.
We don't need them. We need to take, we need to understand we got, but you know, unfortunately we so fucking whacked out that we can't see that. But you know, again, everything is working at its own due course. Everything is alchemical. And I think once the alchemical breakdown has happened, I think we're going to be the victors, man.
And this is really like the core of the podcast, because these words, as they're sitting here uplifting me, our goal is that as when we put them out to the airwaves and share this, that they uplift somebody else, because that's why I listen.
That's what it's about, man, because why are you here? That's why you come to the planet. You can't grow without growing somebody else, man.
You can't
go out without going within. You got to go in and go out.
Right. And even the groundwork that we're doing on the podcast.
I love it.
I pull on a message the one time I heard the minister say, when you look at the seed of a plant, the shoot goes down before it goes up. And so just the foundation that we're laying and your vision of what you see, just in the awareness of what's going to come out of Pittsburgh. And that's us.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And here we are on this move.
It's happening now. Yes.
I agree. It's happening now, bro. I agree.
People are positioning themselves, man. The stars are lining up and I'm seeing it.
And it's even just the evolution of me and Brother Mills' relationship. Like, we always knew, like, okay, we got to do something. And then we was talking about it, and then we, you know, it didn't work out. But this is, like, meant to be, bro.
Yes, you know what I'm saying?
We got to.
And I'm glad y'all got it going,
and
man.
And we got to see it through, you know what I'm saying? And this is just the beginning, bro. Like, anything, you know, we got to stay united and got to stay together. And you see it. Us all being pulled together.
Yes.
You know, and that's a blessing, man. So we thank you for this.
I thank you guys for having me, man.
Yeah, 100%. Brother Mill, we gonna hear some music?
Man, we about to get this music.
Okay, and that's a concept, man. I'm on that gum, bro. Like,
word,
I want to stick a gum.
And big shout out to Dip and Stan, you know what I'm saying?
What's his name?
Dip and Spandolo. They down in Atlanta.
Shout out, man. That's a blessing.
Yeah, they came with a joint called Gum, you know, and we just took it and said, look, let's make this a genre.
The Black Gnostics. Tune in. We're gonna hear some music. We're gonna hear some music, and we're gonna our chakras are gonna line up. We're gonna take them up.
But for real,
go ahead.
I want to say something about them chakras, because, like, the thing is, how do you help children see things in perspectives and ways in which they're not accustomed to? Every kid is gonna see Meg Thee Stallion, Cardi B, DaBaby. They're gonna see. And not that any one of those artists is particularly negative, but they see what's going on in their culture. How do they open up their third eye? How do they, and if you don't understand third eye, how do they begin to recognize that there's more than meets the eye than the surface?
Man, that entails the people who are raising them, the parents, the teachers in the school, just the everyday surroundings, man. And you get those kids with the supreme understanding that come through and already know, you know. So
and it's in them. They already know. So they really do. They really do. That's why certain messages it resonates with them, and then like, yo, okay, you know what I'm saying? So presenting them with alternative models, you know, and you know, the school system, a lot of times there's such an emphasis on separation between church and state, but that's not what a full intellectual is about, right? Nah. To enter a full humanity is to have control over all domains, right? Mm-hmm. The mind, body, and spirit. So,
Yeah, and I think that that's the beauty of us, you know, being in the school. Like, I find so much value in connecting with the youth. Mm-hmm. You know, and they keep me young, you know.
Yeah.
And our value, even though they might not say it right then, because I don't even think they understand it, but when they see us out in the community, like, you know, I think that it's so important, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I think what we're doing, just even the fact that you came in to speak to Brother Mills' students, man. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That was a great class.
That's powerful, man. Yes. And we got it. We have to do that. And we don't bring our employers into this.
Shout out to Hip Hop EDU, man. That's so dope. Incorporating like a culture.
Yeah.
You know, hip hop. This is now a culture, man, and it's a holistic one. If you know, we got some negative aspects to it, but I think that's on behalf of the record labels and the greed by these record execs and shit, you know what I'm saying? But if we can begin to take our culture back,
we can heal
a lot of our mental diseases. We can get healthy. We got breakdancing. I mean, we just who does this type of shit? Like, this is, and we created a culture out of hell?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And we have to, because
now we got a museum.
This is what we got to do, man. And this is why, you know, I'm so happy to be able to instruct students in the digital arts, the arts and media, you know, how to leverage technology, because that's really one of our areas where we can get misled and misrepresented, because people need technical advice and technical experience, whether it's audio engineering or video production or editing skills or making an app, making a website. And a lot of times then we have to go outside of ourselves because we might be lacking in particular skills. Sure, but if we have all of those skills, then we don't have to go.
So that's reciprocity, man. You know what I'm saying?
That's what we on.
Each one teach one. We ain't got to ask for no handouts. We got everything we need. We self-contained. We don't need shit from nobody.
Straight up.
You know, and once we get that idea deeply rooted in our head, we can get off this other shit, because we steady begging. Ain't no paperwork going to save us. Ain't no fucking, like, this. If we don't get this shit, like, from a spiritual sense, like, we're not going to get it, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's right now, we have a great culture called hip-hop, man. And we need to start taking care of that. Start using this shit as a tool for changing the structure of racist ass America. You know what I'm saying? And like, we got some, man, hip hop?
And it's international.
We got the whole world.
The whole world.
We created something to give the world a voice. So people, you telling me people in India who couldn't say nothing to the government can now rap a song and express themselves and express their political, you know what I'm saying, ideologies to these big fucking,
man,
manipulating ass political powers, man.
North Africa, South Africa.
Yo, Brazil.
Brazil, Chile.
Like, look at this.
Europe, UK, shout out the drill. You know what I mean? Shout out all the dudes in the road that's really bringing the real.
And it also says, you know, this particular black male in America is a unique individual. We're very, you know, not to say that we're different and no better than nobody, but are the hell... And the level of diamond that we come into is unmatched. You know, basketball, music, like, this black man in the Americas is really a different type of specimen on the planet.
It's powerful. I remember Minister Farrakhan saying that when he went overseas, he said that it was countries that didn't allow any Western influence, but they were sneaking listening to hip hop, and they were moved by the hip hop. And he and that's that black man that you talk about here in the wilderness of North America. That's us influencing the world, and they would like to.
We always have,
and they would like to keep us blind to ourselves, so that
we don't know our influence. They do not want us to know our value.
Oh man, we're some of the most potent people on the face, in the universe, actually.
And the world is
I'm
like,
not gonna say the planet. I'm gonna say the universe.
You might get shot down in your own hood, but you go abroad and you'll be lifted up and loved and people want to know.
Because you can't see your own eyebrow, can you?
No.
You see, but other people can.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's deep. All right, let's get into some of this music. Let's get into some of this grown-up music, some of this gum. Let me get a stick of gum.
All right.
This message means you being more selective, serving food to the soul, divergently digested, bringing light to the life. That's what the Gnostics projected. We built with love, peace, and happiness, and having fun. Coat your tongue over drum, radiated by the sun, reflections of the seventh letter. It's wise and clever, transferring through the atmosphere to the core of the net, tapping in itself.
Yo, you already heard that right there. That's that gum music right there. You know what I'm saying? Go ahead and get with the brother Koof, man. We doing our things, doing his thing.
So, any last words, brother Koofy, you want to close us out with? How can are you on social media?
You can get I'm at Koofu Anu Ali L on Facebook.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Koofu L on Twitter.
Okay.
So
I'm gonna get on there and follow you right now.
Yeah, the museum is kind of I need to be pushing more the museum.
Now I heard you make reference to the museum. What tell us about the museum real quick.
Oh, it's the Universal Hip Hop Museum in the Bronx.
Okay.
Get your free tickets. All you gotta do is get online, set your date up, you know what I'm saying? You can set it up all the way to the end of the year. They're free. So if you're in New York.
And this is in effect now. This is open.
This is right now.
And
it's the pop up.
So the Universal
Hip Hop Museum. So you wanna go to UHHM.org.
And this is in the Bronx.
And this is in the Bronx.
The essence of where the hip hop all started.
Kicked off.
That's powerful.
Brother.
That's powerful. Yep. So, brother, we want to wrap this, man, but we thank you, man.
And I mean this,
this lifted my spirits, bro.
Thank you.
You know,
I'm
glad. And I would say this is just the beginning of. I mean, you've been building with Brother Mill for a while, but. We got to stay connected, man.
We're here, man.
And not just connected, we got to build.
We got movies to do, man. We got so much to do, man. Like small little docs, like small things, man. We just got to do it.
Yes. Yes.
We just got to do it.
Yes. Yeah. And I do believe that it is the Berg's time, and it is time for black people to rise in the Berg. You know what I'm saying? And like you said, but we the ones most marginalized, and I believe that is propaganda, like you said, man. And so and we're gonna prove them wrong, man.
Oh man, yeah. Look, for anybody that's in the Berg listening to this, like if you got any skill set, any business you want to do,
yes,
anything you want to do, trust me, the time is now. You want to do it now.
Yes,
the energies are perfect. You know, it's just like hashtag. Let's be clear, 2020. You know.
Yes.
This is it. So,
and we want to tell your story. So please reach out to EPND Podcast on Twitter, EPNDpodcast.com, EPNDpodcast@gmail.com. Please hit us up because if you're doing something, we want to tell your story. We want to get you on the mic, and the world deserves to know because you are an extraordinary person next door.
That's right.
And we want to come knock on your door. We promise we won't kick it in. We just gonna knock because we let us in, man. You know what I'm saying? So,
and I'll give a shout out to you guys, man, for giving small cats like me instead of, you know, being a big gangster, you know, getting a platform because, you know, I'm running around here killing people and right. I'm a tough ass nigga and I get to get highlighted and shit, you know man. What I'm saying? So I definitely appreciate you guys and all praises due to the gods for like highlighting the small people, man.
We thank you, brother, sincerely. So peace. We signing off. Peace. Another episode of EPND, Extraordinary People Next Door.
Peace out.
Peace.